If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill at its lowest price ever and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first and only GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Based on advertised cash price for 30-day supply of medication only. Membership required. Fee not included, and billed separately. Weight Loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Hello and welcome to Take the Black, the one and only podcast on the internet that goes through fantasy and sci-fi stuff every week. Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, especially everything based in Westeros, like A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which is what we're here to talk about, regardless of how I fumble my intro. I am Daniel Roman, the editor of winteriscoming.net, and I am psyched, as always, to be joined by Mark Nettles of House of Nettles. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing great. We had nights. We got new episodes. What can go wrong?
Nothing. For Sir Duncan the Tall, maybe a couple things. This was a, you know, it's a big episode this week. We have so much to talk about. It's crazy.
Yes, it was so dense. We got what we've been seeing in the trailers for months and months, and we finally got to see it. We finally got to see Dunk in action being a knight.
Yes, we did. And, you know, he had to suck it up and get over the nerves. And yeah, it's interesting because this is, you know, it's kind of been pitched as like almost like a knight's tale a little bit in Westeros, but like this is really the one time Dunk has to mix it up in this whole story, and it's brutal. I dare say it's even more brutal in the show than it was in the book.
Agreed.
So yeah, obviously we need to talk about episode 5. We're back here at our normal time. The episode just aired at 10 p.m. Eastern on HBO and HBO Max. As you're watching this, that's not what time it is. Right here, we're coming at you from the past. So we are, or your future, our past, something like that.
Your present, our past.
Exactly.
We're meeting together. We're intersecting.
Yes. It's days of future past here on the podcast today. So we're going to talk about episode 5, In the Name of the Mother. But before we get into that, actually, let's talk about the episode first. Well, we have some crazy spoilery stuff to talk about from some interviews that went up in the past week, and a lot of it that went up in the past like 24 hours as we're recording this. But I don't want to make you guys wait to talk about episode 5 because it's insane.
And as we start real quick, I know we're about to start talking about it. I do want to say best line from the episode: "No man fights so fierce as one neglected by his mother," said by Lionel Baratheon. Had to even write it down on my piece of paper to make sure I remember to say the whole thing.
Yeah, that was a good line. So that's a fun line to bring up. My first watch, I was like, that's kind of weird. Like, that's a little random. Fits Lionel's character. But I realized as we got into the episode, that's kind of talking about Dunk even though he doesn't know it. Like, for us as viewers, we find out that Dunk was abandoned by his mom in this episode because, surprise, it's half a flashback episode.
That's the majority of the episode. You go into it thinking, it really all is. Right, I'm ready for an action pack, 30 minutes of them rolling around, jumping, sprinting, and we get that, but we get a good chunk of, hey, this is how, you know, when Harry and Sally, well, not when Harry and Sally, but when Dunk meets Arlen, Sir Arlen.
Yeah, totally. So let's talk about that. So the opening of this episode opens, obviously, with the start of the trial, the whole joust bit of the trial, Dunk gets knocked out. All of that is taken pretty much directly from the novella, like down to like some of the staging. Like, I'm a sucker for like a choreographed fight scene that pulls bits from a book. And they did that here, like Thunder's back legs dropping. Like, that's a thing from the book. Like, so chef's kiss, whoever made those choices. But 4 minutes into this episode, Dunk loses consciousness. And then we are off on a 19-minute flashback.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about the opening scene at all? And then how did you feel about that as a thing?
Yeah, I mean, we open up. We got, I'm assuming, a teenage Dunk on a battlefield, a former battlefield right outside of King's Landing. And we see his friend Rafe, who I think only gets a mention in the second novella, The Sworn Sword.
Oh, good catch. Good catch.
Yes. So it's just a quick mention of their character. We really don't know. I don't think we even know their fate from the book.
Yeah,
but we get them fleshed out. And it's in the book. I think it's assumed that Rafe is, you think it's a boy, the way they describe them. But
yeah,
as we learn in the show canon, Rafe is a girl that he liked, the girl who they grew up with. And we see them on that battlefield trying to collect things from the deceased soldiers so they can sell to get a little bit of money because they are broke and poor.
Yep.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, trying to get out of King's Landing. So, yeah, so Rafe in this, played by Dune Prophecy star Chloe Leah. Yeah, you know, so I've seen the episode a couple times now, and there's some details I missed about that whole battlefield that are, it kind of makes it almost more important. I have a feeling, I'm pretty sure that's supposed to be the Redgrass Field, which is the final battlefield of the Blackfyre Rebellion, the first one.
So
the Redgrass Field is just like, we don't know exactly where it is, but it's in the Crownlands. And there are a few lines in this episode where Dunk talks about the war now being over because the Black Dragon's dead. That's the Blackfyre Rebellion, which if you're watching this, listening, you don't know what the Blackfyre Rebellion is. We've written about it at winterscoming.net, but basically it's a rebellion that happened 13 years before the Ashford Meadow tourney, where a bunch of Targaryen bastards tried to take over the Iron Throne. And it ended at this battle at the Redgrass Field, where like 10,000 people died in this fight, and including Daemon Blackfyre, who was like the leader of this force. And when they try to sell the leather belt they took from, you know, the dying Frey in the battlefield, the blacksmith guy they sell it to is like, oh, we'll be picking over that tomb, talking about the battlefield, for a dragon's age. And then he says, we don't take this Blackfyre leather. Like, get this out of here. Mm. I was surprised at all those little details in the flashback that, like, those are for the uber nerds, you know? Like casual viewers are going to miss a lot of this. That's totally fine. Like, we're there for Dunk's story, but, like, if you're interested in the history of Westeros, like, they really sprinkled a lot of juicy stuff in there.
Exactly. That little bit was for you. When they said that bit about the Blackfyre leather, I'm like, I want the Blackfyre leather. I'll put it on my bookshelf, right? If you want to hand it to someone. And just seeing the dynamics of Flea Bottom in that moment. Everyone's just rushing around. It's chaotic. And we see them interact with I'm assuming there's a gold cloak, the soldier with missing one hand.
I assumed that was just a random thief. He's got kind of a goldy cloak though. So maybe he is, but I don't know how many thieves are running around in the gold cloaks. I guess that's,
well, probably a lot though.
probably. Well, how many people who are guilty enough that there's a visible reminder every time they come around? But I guess, you know, they're not what they used to be under Daemon Targaryen back in the day of House of the Dragon.
Exactly. See, I assumed he might have lost it during one of these fights and skirmishes they had going on about. I mean, of course, it had already healed, but I was like, okay, maybe he's a injured soldier. You fought for the winning side, but what did you really win? You're missing a hand. You're not the fighter you once were now.
Yeah.
He was right-handed.
I did not give that dude that kind of benefit of the doubt. I was like, that guy's a thief. He's missing a hand here. Because we've talked about, or Baylor talked about that in the episode 4 about people losing a hand for thievery or whatever. Like,
yeah.
I think that guy mentions it, that you lose a hand for thieving, because Rafe steals his stuff. And then, later on, she tries to steal his knife cause she's bitter, and then she gets, murdered. So that was pretty sad. What did you think of that whole storyline? Because you're right, like, this is the best look we've ever gotten at like what it's like for just a normal person in Flea Bottom.
Yeah, like, we've seen things landing, but to see, you know, the true Flea Bottom, like, there's no princes really running through here, there's no lords coming through that area. I think it was great just seeing, did Dunk have a lot? No, but did he at least have one person that cared about him, one person that, you know, it seemed like they did have a childhood crush between them, and maybe they could have ran off somewhere, lived their life together, and it all could have been magical. But as you mentioned, it comes to a crushing end where that thief gold cloak slashed her throat when he noticed that she had stolen his knife.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And then Dunk gets stabbed in the leg, and then Sir Arlen of Pennytree comes out to his defense, because he hears him shouting outside of a wine sink, and he comes out totally wasted. Yeah. He comes out and barfs and then murders these two people before they can kill Dunk.
Hey, he made sure to yell in the name of the mother before he saved the day. So shout out to him.
He did. You know, it makes me think of, there are a lot of like interviews with Ira Parker from earlier this season where he talks about how Sir Arlen's thing as a hedge knight was just like, do what little good you can for whoever's around you in the moment. And like, that's what happens here. Like, this drunken ass knight sees a little kid who's about to get killed and just comes to his defense and then leaves. He doesn't even say anything to Dunk. How do you feel about the way this episode portrayed Sir Arlen? Cause he's kind of on a bender for like 95% of the episode.
He's on a bender, but we kind of see and understand why when Dunk tries to go to where he is. We see him rifling through all the Sir Arlen things while he's drunk laying on the ground. You see that freshly dug grave in the helm right on top, and that's assumed. I can't remember if they mentioned it in the show, but he did have a nephew who died, who was his squire, who died during the battle at the Redgrass Field. And I was thinking that that's where he buried him, because I mean, where else? You can't take him all the way back home to Pennytree. That's too far away. You don't have the funds to. It's not like Tywin Lannister moving across the country. Like, he's just one man. So that's where he had his last resting place for his nephew.
Man, that adds so much more context to Sir Arlen. Like, it's like the hidden tragedy of what's going on in Sir Arlen's life at that time. Because if this is like right after the Redgrass Field, which is like, again, I didn't really think that at first, but like going back, like watching with the fine tooth comb, like I think this is like right after that. So if Sir Arlen just lost his nephew, just buried him, then he's going on a bender in Flea Bottom and defending this little kid who's, you know, a young boy, like, who knows how close age wise he is to the nephew, probably a little younger, but like Sir Arlen sees a little boy getting attacked and he saves him.
Yeah.
And then he just like wanders the countryside just drunk, trying to shut himself off from the world. Man, that gives it a whole nother level than just like he's a lush, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just seeing him traveling and then seeing Dunk trying to go behind, follow him. He got stabbed in the leg, so he's limping, but that's, you know, he's taking a risk. Like, totally. Remember what Raph said, we need to go, we need to leave King's Landing. Now that she's passed away, he's like, you know what, this is an opportunity. I'm just gonna follow this man to the ends of the earth. And we see he almost did that because he passed out drinking dirty water, barely eating any food, just following this random hedge knight.
Yeah, totally. And I feel like it's, you know, it's setting up a little bit Dunk's endurance, you know, his rock-headed endurance to just keep going, which is relevant because he gets really beaten up in this episode in the present and in the Trial of Seven. So here we see him even as a young kid who's just like determined, and he's just going to do the thing, even if that means walking halfway across the Crown Lands with a wounded leg and nothing to eat. And then Sir Arlen, you know, after taking a nap on his own knife, I thought that was a funny, so he wakes up, he's like, ugh, like not even like shocked, just like, damn it, really? You know, has this happened before?
I was about to say, do you think that's how he got that cut on his wrist that caused him to get that infection in episode one? Well, that we see in episode two, the reason he passed
like he did it again.
Yes.
Maybe I wouldn't be confident enough in Sir Arlen to rule it out.
You know,
do you think that's what happened to him?
I think he's gotten a little reckless, and I think they tried to indicate that a little bit in this episode by saying like, I fell asleep with my knife, and that not that night, but maybe prior to we seeing Sir Arlen in all his glory, maybe he cut himself again in his sleep, and he just didn't try to heal it. And you know, you don't try to clean a wound.
Yeah,
it's gonna get infected.
Yeah, I mean, the life of a hedge knight is not glamorous and cleanly. Like we see that with Sir Arlen, we saw it with Dunk. You know, but yeah. So that flashback sequence, I won't lie, the thing it kind of reminded me of, because they did it so early, like 4 minutes in, and then boom, you're watching a flashback for 20 minutes for like, again, like more than half the episode is this flashback. It reminded me of like Tyrion and Jaime and Lannister in the Mountain and the Viper episode, because like that battle between Oberyn Martell and the Mountain was like a thing fans had been like looking forward to for years. So we finally got to that episode, and then it's like, oh, here it comes at the very end. And there's like a 10-minute conversation between Tyrion and Jaime about their like mentally challenged cousin killing beetles. I remember being like, am I being punked right now? Is it even in this episode? And like, you know, there's thematic resonance to that conversation, whatever, just like there is with this flashback. But this is the first time in a while with this franchise I had that same feeling of like, I thought this was going to be a battle episode. Am I getting punked? So like, I like it. I do like the flashback, and especially having watched it more than once. Yeah. Did this work for you? Like, what did you think of this?
I was surprised the first time I saw it, but it worked for me. Because like you said, I've watched it multiple times now. And at first I was like, oh, this is very jarring. But it makes more sense. It gives you a deeper just understanding of the world. I understand Dunk's character, his motivations, and maybe even how I understand more about Sir Arlen, way more than I ever did in the novel. Just of, you know, hearing that he lost his nephew and how he might have reacted to that, and then actually seeing it, and then, you know, reflecting on maybe something personal in your life, how you, if you did lose someone before, and like how, what's a good way to react to it? Like, I know he was drunk, he was stumbling around, like I had the subtitles on when he was just yelling words, like it wasn't even saying anything.
Yeah, totally.
I was like, maybe he's saying a secret message, but it definitely worked for me, and just, you know, adding another layer to some of our main characters.
Yeah, I agree with that. And like Sir Arlen, he's kind of been one of the pleasant surprises of this adaptation, because like we never see him when he's alive in the book. Like Dunk, we see Dunk recalling what he was like, but that's different. I like that the show kind of has kept this where Dunk talks about Sir Arlen, then we see Sir Arlen. It's like, he's not quite the way you're describing him, this dude. But you know, he was that for Dunk, because Dunk, we see now, Dunk had nothing. He had one person, and that person got killed, and then he followed the next person who saved him. And like, Sir Arlen took him in, treated him, you know, like a squire, and like he mentored him. And yeah, it's good stuff. I really like the flashback. I feel like it adds so much to this world and this time period of Westeros. And it's, again, I like that the things that they're expanding that weren't in the book are all things that are like relevant to this story, instead of like like the House of the Dragon route of like, let's tie things back to Game of Thrones as much as we can with some of the things they add. Like, mm-hmm. I like that this is just like, let's dig deeper into who Dunk is as a person. Really yes. worked.
Yes, that great. Like, kudos. I never thought I would like flashbacks so much until watching A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. So they got me. I'm on a flashback hook. You got a flashback, I'm willing to see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is like probably the longest flashback in the franchise's history, because like Game of Thrones didn't really use them. There was that one with Maggie the Frog in season 5, I think. It was really like the main flashback of Game of Thrones. House of the Dragon didn't really have them aside from like dream sequences and stuff. But here, like Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is like, we can make this one of our things. And I liked it. I like that they inserted it in a point where Dunk like loses consciousness too. Like that is from the book, him hitting his head and then waking up and he's just still in the battle and, you know, oh God, what do we do? But they were like, we can slip in 20 minutes of flashback here.
Yes, yes. Now, are we back with our big Dunk in the main series? I mean, not the main series, in the
we could be. I mean, we probably should be, right? We don't want to spend 20 minutes of our episode talking about the 20 minutes of the flashback episode.
Did we flashback ourselves?
Did we? Yeah. I mean, maybe we are in the past right now, or the future, or some alternate timeline. Yeah. So let's jump back to the present. So there is this absolutely brutal, bloody fight that happens between Dunk and Aerion Targaryen. Any highlights from this? Any thoughts? Anything that jumped out at you about this fight?
I want to say I love just the start of it with Baelor going around hyping up his team Dunk, getting everybody ready, saying, "Hey, they're coming in. They're finna try to do bad things to us. We got to do bad things to them." And you can see a little animosity between him and Lord Lionel Baratheon, and I'm like, "Oh, he had a little bar for him in that line that I mentioned at the beginning of the episode," but. And then watching everybody throw up. And I do want to say, just to watch Sir Duncan in that initial charge automatically get knocked on his behind, I'm like, oh! Yeah. Like, even this whole time, we've been building up for 5.5 episodes at this moment, and then immediately see him get knocked off his horse. I'm like, that happened faster than I thought, if I never knew the story.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Like, he's just down, and the shot of him getting stabbed with the lance and then ripping it out, brutal.
Yes,
there are a lot of really brutal injuries Dunk takes, almost, and like, this is such a weird nitpick, I almost feel like he got chopped up too much. Like, when we come back to him when he's fighting with Aerion and he's just getting sliced left and right, it's like, how is this dude not dead? Like, and you know, he has armor, so presumably the armor is helping not all of these sword wounds really go into him the way they would if he didn't.
Steely Pate told him he makes some pretty gosh darn good armor.
That's true. Real Steely Pate is the real hero of this episode.
He made good armor, good helmets, as we come to see, compared to other fancier helmets.
It's true. It's true. Visors are a weakness. Steely Pate knows what's up.
Yes.
But yeah, so the whole like, the opening charge, I do like and think it's like, you know, it's a surprising thing probably for a lot of viewers, like how quickly Dunk gets laid out. Again, it's 4 minutes, then we're in the, you know, the flashback. And the stuff with Baelor is interesting because, like, you know, he in the book, he has them use tourney lances. That's a thing they cut from the show. I think it's probably fine that they cut that, even though I like it. They didn't really talk about this stuff. This is like, you know, tourney nuance, like little details about the equipment that like they never really mentioned much before. Essentially, the tourney lances, for people listening who may not know, they're like a few inches longer. They don't have a point though, so Baelor is like, use these, they're a little longer than Arion's lances that are tipped and made of steel, and we'll knock them off their horses and we'll have the advantage. Here he's just like, go attack them and try not to die. Like, you're right. There, it does feel like there's a little bit more, you know, animosity. It's a little edgier and darker. But I think that worked. You know, they really tried to make this a scarier thing, I think, even than it was in the book. And it worked. I was nervous for Dunk this whole time.
Yeah, it felt brutal throughout that whole match. Like seeing him on the ground, seeing people still, because Baylor told him, try to stay on your horse as long as you can, and seeing other riders coming, knocking Dunk down, knocking Prince Arian down when they're trying to fight each other. And I every time it happened, I'm like, what? Who was that? Who knocked him down?
Yeah, totally.
What am I seeing?
Yeah, I think there was at least once where Arion might have even got hit by one of his own Kingsguard, where like the back of their horse just like went against him as he was trying to stumble around. Like it was chaos that fight. And I think they did a good job of that, of like sticking to Dunk's POV, even though I wish we probably like could have seen a little bit more of some of the other fighters in there and like what they were up to. I think that it was a smart choice to just really home in on Dunk and let the chaos of everything else just like be around him. Aside from a couple of really brief scenes, like when Arion thinks he's won and he goes to the podium, and then Egg shouts for Dunk to get back up, gets back up. And then the people cheer for him, which I loved.
Yeah, you get just seeing the differences in the crowds, like the whole, all the small folk, I'm pointing to them like they're behind me. They're all cheering for Dunk. They're all rooting for him. They're like, oh my, he is the people's champion. And if I was in Prince Arian's shoes, like I remember a long time ago playing college football, having the crowd cheer against you, you know, it doesn't feel good, but it motivates you. But to see like the people you thought would be on your side, like they're just raucous. And then to see the lords and ladies, like they're just up there quiet. They're not cheering for anyone, just trying to stay. And I understand from their perspective, they're trying to stay as neutral as possible, because beforehand, one side had all the Targaryens, easy to pick for, easy to know who we're going to root for. Prince Baelor enters the scene. It's like, oh, well, we can't make fun of the Hedge Knight side anymore. We have to kind of stay on our P's and Q's. But shout out to Red in the crowd. She made a little. She was cheering for Dunk. If anybody was, her and Egg were.
Yeah, totally. I like that the little reaction shots with Red we got at the end of the last episode and during this episode. I like that they've had her in the mix. I feel like it's been fun to have, you know, a few other characters who aren't lords and, you know, on the stands to kind of see their reactions. And this, you know, the scene where Dunk stands back up, where it looks like he died, which it's like, they just put that to fake us out, and that's fine. Like, that's fine. It's based on the books, Dunk and Egg, like, obviously Dunk's not dead, but it was tense. But he stands back up and they cheer. And I feel like this almost makes up for a little bit. I'm sure you saw Ira Parker, the showrunner, did a Reddit AMA, right?
Yes.
He talked about, one of the things he mentioned was there's a scene from the book where the small folk cheer for Dunk as he's coming up to the field. And Dunk he's with Steely Payne. He's like, why are they happy to see me? Like, why are they doing this? And Steely Payne's like, you're a knight who remembered your vows. And like, that is a really central, like, thematic part of the book. And I feel like they got that with that moment where he stands back up and all the small folk cheer. And Arion just looks exhausted and scared, and it's like chef's kiss, so good.
Yeah, Dunk was giving it to Arion, like he had his sword in his hand. At a certain point, I'm like, all right, you just swinging it. I don't think we're using too much technique, but you know, I think it was a good, almost fair, evenly matched between the both of them.
Yeah, I agree, and still, you know, it's Dunk of Fleabottom who wins, not Dunk the Knight, you know, Dunk of Fleabottom who gets on top of him and just starts pounding him. And yeah, that's, I like that when it came back to them, they did a lot of cool stuff with like subjective sound design, where like things are muffled and like you can't really hear well because Dunk can't really hear well. The camera going in his helmet at the beginning, like they did a really good job of putting you in Dunk's shoes. And like, by that point, they're both so exhausted that like they get back up to fight, and like neither of them looks good doing it. Like they're both falling over, but they have no choice. Like they're in it at that point.
Yeah, all because Prince Arian wanted to be a little douche.
Yeah, yes, he did. And it didn't work out well for him.
No, I wonder, was George? I know George R. R. Martin, the writer of this of this novella. I know he loved the show from what he said so far. Was he a little upset that Dunk took his helmet off in the middle of a fight? I know he has a thing with helmets.
Yeah.
Like you got to have your helmet on. You're going to be in the fight, Dunk. That's not a smart thing to do, especially people running around with horses, on their horses, with maces and long swords.
Yep, there is a picture in the Hedge Knight book, the A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, where Dunk is holding up Arion and Dunk has his helmet on. You know, like for that very last bit where he makes him go say that he yields to Lord Ashford. But yeah, it's funny that you say that, because before this, I did think about the fact that this is like the one Game of Thrones series where everyone does have their helmet on. You know, like if they're jousting, if they're fighting, they've got a helmet on.
Yes.
So it does, you know, Martin has talked kind of historically about this back when Game of Thrones was on it, that's like one of his big pet peeves, like little pet peeves, but like one of his long running pet peeves, because in television, you don't want your lead actors' faces to be covered. So they typically don't get helmets for battles, but no one in their right mind would not wear a helmet in a battle, is kind of his take. So yeah. That's fair. I will have to wait for the inevitable blog post, you know, where he's like, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms was okay, except Dunk took his helmet off.
It took me out the show all together.
Yep. I wrote and I said, that's not my Dunk. But yeah, so the melee was epic and brutal. I do think it almost became comical just how much Dunk was getting stabbed. Like, I'm hoping that they don't just hand wave that next episode and we see him recovering and he's in bad shape, because he got messed up. Got messed up in this episode.
But I will say he had some good tactical moments in the fight, going for the opening on Prince Arion's growing area where the armors meet each other. He saw an opening. He took it. You got to be precise when you're making that slash too. So yeah. Shout out to him.
Yeah, totally. And that's another one where, again, like the armor probably saved Arion's life, because like that's an artery, like, you know, yes, that's the spot. Like, we've seen people die in Game of Thrones from that exact wound, but Arion, like, spoiler here, but like Arion's not gonna die from the Trial of Seven. Like, he's not dead in the book after this. They wouldn't just let him die off screen from that wound. So like, that's another instance where the armor probably saved Arion's life, but Dunk still, you know, like you said, he went for the seam between the pieces and yeah. Took him out.
And I want to say, when that happens in the background, we see Prince Maekar fighting yes. Prince Baylor, and Maekar goes a little crazy because his son just got stabbed across his leg, and he, you know, hits his brother and does his best to make it over there where they're fighting.
Yeah, totally. That reaction shot of Maekar is one of the few times we really skip out of Dunk's POV to another fighter. And yeah, I love that, where, you know, we've seen Maekar just be disgusted and annoyed with Arion just over and over in this show, because Arion is being a loathsome jerk, and Maekar, like, he sees through it. He's just like, I can see that you are being an ass. But here Arion gets wounded. It's not looking good for him. And then Maekar's like, my son, and he's trying to get to him, and he's getting held back and stuff. Like, I felt for Maekar in that moment. Like, you know, he is a victim of all this as much as anyone, you know, even though he accidentally, you know, dings Baylor a little harder than he meant to. And that leads to some tragedy. He's a tragic character here.
Yeah. History was made on this battlefield, and probably not the way everyone thought it was going to be made.
Yep.
Yeah, because I think right after that, at the end of the fight, Dunk won. He's getting carried off the field by Steely Pate and Raymond Fosaway. And they're going to go sit him down. They're like, man, he's not looking good. As soon as they say, why don't we pour some boiling oil into that big wound?
We hear, Baylor's like, don't do that.
That is not what you do. That is not what Maesters do. You boil some wine, and we can clean that wound out.
Yeah. But then, you know, Baylor asks for help with his helmet. This is kind of the big shocker ending of the episode. He asks for help with his helmet because Maekar hit it a little harder than he meant to. And he's like, Maekar always was strong. And, you know, Dunk's like, I'm your man. And he's like, the kingdom needs, you know, the realm needs good men. And then his helmet comes off and part of his head comes off with it. So obviously we both knew this was coming because we've read the book. How did you feel? Like, what was your reaction to watching this?
And like, knowing it's going to happen, I was really interested in how are they going to portray Because in the books, I always got the picture that we see a piece of his skull come out. They didn't do. I don't think they went that far.
Something gray came out. There's a line like that where it's like part of his brain came out. They didn't go that far.
No,
I was grateful, happy. I think. Yeah, I was like, that's okay.
You know, a hole in the back of your head. No matter if something falls out or not, not a good sign. Not a good thing. And I know. That's a very good callback to what we hear Daeron the Drunkard, Daeron Targaryen, mm-hmm. what he said in the previous episode about the dragon dream he had about Dunk laying at Ashford Meadow in the field with a giant dragon laying on top of them, covering the whole meadow.
Yeah, totally. And it was the giant dragon because Baelor was a titan among men, so to speak. Like he was the noble heir to the Iron Throne that like, you know, not to say that he was universally beloved, because there was the Blackfyre Rebellion happened. There is some friction in the kingdom at this point between people who like the king and his heir and people who, you know, maybe harbor some enmity toward Dorne, because Daeron brought Dorne into the Seven Kingdoms. Baelor is like half Dornish, you know, he looks Dornish. That's why he's got dark hair, because his mom is Dornish. So there's some weird stuff going on there with some of the Lord's opinions of that. But I think it's pretty much not super disputed that he's a well-equipped heir, you know, like he's been training for it his whole life. He's even tempered. He's not remotely crazy or mad. You know, he's a fair and a kind and considerate person. And then, yeah, he goes down in this instant because he stood for a Hedge Knight and he got hit by his own brother, and the Seven Kingdoms will not be the same.
No. The dragon has fallen, and really like almost makes you think about everything that's happened up until this point. Just what you've mentioned, like they're coming off this rebellion years ago. There's still tension. There's all these houses. It's probably one of the main reasons he came to this tourney. I mean, of course, it's a tournament, mm-hmm. but this was for the heir to the Iron Throne to be at a place like Ashford Meadow for a tourney. It does seem odd unto itself, but he was here. It makes you think how is the realm going to react? What happens next? Because we know, okay, his son is there. His son is next in line. And you went from, oh man, it's great. My dad, he's gonna go out there, be a hero. Everything's gonna be all right. So wow, I'm next in line. Like how does this affect all the major houses across Westeros and just the people in general?
Yeah, totally. It's definitely a big question. And I don't know. You know, the thing about Duncan Egg is that we may not get an immediate answer to that, because these stories tend to stick so tightly to Duncan Egg that obviously the finale we can pretty much presume is going to mostly deal with the fallout of Baelor dying and what that means for the people at the tournament. I think what it means on the broader scale probably won't become clear until season two, when, you know, hopefully Duncan Egg are traveling around a bit more. And it's definitely, like you said, history was made at this tournament, and not in a good way. And it's going to haunt, you know, people like Maekar, who did love his brother. Like, that's part of what makes this so tragic, because you have, like, you know, the Game of Thrones deaths where, like Robb Stark got outmaneuvered and it was a terrible coup and, like, all these things. Jon Snow got betrayed by the Night's Watch. But I can't remember... The closest thing to Baelor to me is Ned, where like he was a good, noble person. Cersei didn't want him to die. She made the mistake of thinking her son was trustworthy enough to not do something stupid, like actually order the execution. And instead he gets executed. And like, so like Cersei messed up there, but like things went out of her control. It wasn't what she wanted. Kind of similar here, except even worse, because it's a dude like Maekar is a kinslayer. Like he accidentally killed his brother, and like that's gonna haunt him for the rest of his life. So yeah, heavy stuff.
It kind of recolors the whole tourney. Where two episodes ago Dunk was over here throwing up in the morning trying to get ready to compete.
Yeah.
now, a whole day later, he's the heir to the Iron Throne's dead. People are hurt and injured all around him. They lost two men, make it three men on their side as a result of this tourney. So
yeah, totally. So you know, this kind of gives us the range here where this show was really light, really fun to start off with. Like, it really reeled people in with the earnest, heartwarming, you know, fun scenes with Duncan Egg. And then here, like, it's like, oh yeah, this is Game of Thrones. We can have shocker deaths. It can be terrible and stun you just as much as the original series ever did. And I think it works. Like, I don't think it's too much of a tonal shift. Like, it feels like an appropriate amount of a tonal shift for what happened. But yeah, so overall, how are you feeling about this episode? This was an important one. You think they nailed it?
I think they nailed it. Again, I think this Trial by Seven was everything I wanted to see on the small screen. I understand, of course, action scenes, it's gonna take a small amount of time. So it was smart for them to have that in the episode.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Somebody called me. Yeah. So it was smart for them to have that in the episode. But overall, great episode. I can't wait. I know we got to wait a whole year now, gosh darn it, but I can't wait to see the fallout and to see more of these adventures with Duncan Egg.
Yeah. I am glad that it's a yearly show. It's nice that we only have to wait a year, and we've got one more episode still, but yeah, I mean, I agree. I think they nailed, you know, what they needed to with this episode, and any, you know, I think it's going to age like wine a little bit here. You know, the stuff like the flashback, I imagine that's going to get a lot of people talking and a lot of people debating if they liked it or not. But you know, this is in the book, it's like eight to 10 pages, like with illustrations and stuff in there. It's not a long battle, and they spent, you know, 15 minutes or whatever on it. Like, that's not that much shorter than something like the Battle of the Bastards, I think, is like 20 something minutes. Yeah. So like, you know, they couldn't do that for a whole episode. They had to do something else. But pacing wise, like, this is the chunk that makes sense as the penultimate episode, like the trial, you know, ending with Baelor's death. Like, there's nothing else they could have ended this episode with, in my opinion. Like, it had to be that. So
I do want to ask, when you were watching the episode for the first time, were you on the lookout, since you read the novella, for if we were going to see him get hit in the head? Because I know was.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. And then my second watch, I really tried to, it's hard to catch who's getting hit and where they're getting hit and stuff like that. Like, it, you really do have to go through and like pause and like freeze frame stuff. But I did, obviously, for sure, I was like, where's the hit for Baelor gonna happen? Like, they've got to have it, you know, they've got to have it in the background, because it's a TV show, they can do that.
Yes.
You know, just have the one quick reaction shot and then we're back to the action, and it happens so fast you don't even think about it. So yeah, I was, you were.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, so good stuff. In the Name of the Mother, penultimate episode. I can't wait to see what the chatter and the reaction is like to this, because there are a lot of people who haven't read these novellas. They're more obscure than A Song of Ice and Fire, and it's already been really fun to see like people reacting to Egg's identity and then Baelor taking Dunk's side, and now this is the big twist. So yeah. You have anything else you want to talk about for this episode?
Great episode, nothing else. But I do want to say I am Team Blackfyre, so may the black long may the black fires rain. So every time they mention him, I get a little happier. I'm like, yay, the true noble house of Westeros. But great episode.
Nice. Yeah, I will say the Blackfyre Rebellion is one of those things where it's kind of been like not that important for any of the other Game of Thrones, you know, the main Game of Thrones show, or like, obviously hasn't happened yet by House of the Dragon, but like, I like that they're building it in more into this, and they're starting to drop more hints in the Hedge Knight, because in the second and third novellas it's really relevant. So yeah. Like, and it will plague these characters throughout their lives, essentially. They're in the time period where the Blackfyre rebellions are a problem.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree with the you know, I don't know if I'm Team Blackfyre. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Damon, Blackfire, and Bittersteel are pretty cool. But I do get happy when they mention it. Yeah. Like, I got really psyched when I went back and watched the flashback and was like, oh, there are a bunch of little tiny nods. Like, House Frey, the fact that there's a House Frey knight that Dunk and Rafe find, and I'm pretty sure they're who they take the Blackfire stuff off of. It's like, we had an idea that House Frey supported the Blackfires from the Mystery Knight, which is the third book. But this is the first time we really got it confirmed that in the first Blackfire Rebellion, the Freys fought for them. Because, you know, they're the Freys. Of course, they're going to be opportunistic.
Always pick the wrong side.
Pretty much, yeah. But yeah, so great episode. There's a couple of other things we need to talk about here just briefly at the end. Because as we're recording this, there have been a bunch of interesting little spoilery drops that are relevant to the book series from some of the actors on the show. So this is going to be book spoilers. It's not really going to spoil anything major for the television series that we know of right now, you know, like the three books that George R. R. Martin has written. This is for later books. So have you seen any of Dexter Saul Ansel or Peter Claffey's interviews that have been going around in the past couple days?
I have not. So this is all going to be new to me. So I think I'm learning with everyone else.
Okay. All right. Well, let me lay these on you, because there are three we need to talk about.
Okay.
The first is that Dexter Saul Ansel says George R. R. Martin told him and Peter Claffey that Dunk survives Summer Hall. Yeah,
I don't think you're supposed to tell us that. I think we're supposed to.
I don't think so. He says George R. R. Martin told them that Dunk survives. So Summer Hall, if you're watching, listening, don't know what that is. That's the thing that prophecy egg god is alluding to. We broke this down on Winter's Coming. If you want to read about it, essentially, egg way later on will be king. He will want to bring dragons back, and he will accidentally burn his whole family alive in their summer palace, which was Summer Hall. And it's a huge tragedy, and it shapes people like the Mad King, who is Egg's grandson. It's been widely assumed that Egg dies there, obviously, and that Dunk would die with him. But the 11-year-old actor who plays Egg says he knows that Dunk survives. So what do you think of that?
Now, did he say Dunk and Egg survived?
Just Dunk. He said we don't know what happens to Egg, but we know that Dunk survives Summer Hall.
Oh my goodness.
So
is it possible Dunk leaves and tries to make atonement for this tragedy that almost eliminated House Targaryen and so many others? And that's why we don't see him in the histories anymore, because he just kind of vanishes?
I don't know. There's so much speculation, like on Reddit, around the internet, about like, if Dunk does survive Summer Hall, like, what does he do? Like, does he go join the Night's Watch, where like Brynden Rivers, so the Three-Eyed Raven, Dunk knew him when he was a person, Brynden Rivers. He's one of the other great Targaryen bastards, and he becomes the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch for a while. Did he go join the Night's Watch? Did he go back to being a hedge knight? You know, did he go across the Narrow Sea to Essos? Like, there's so many possibilities. I feel like he would probably, like, I think it would be neat if he went back to being a hedge knight. And he's just like, Egg's gone. I've lived a hell of a life. I'm just going to go around doing small kindnesses again. You know, to atone, like you said, because it's not just Egg. It's like the whole family, except for like a handful of people.
Yeah. Maybe he went off to, I guess it couldn't be Westeros, because they're going to know the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard. So maybe he did go to Essos and hedge knighting over there, not joining the Free Company, just like you said, doing small acts of kindness. Cause at this point he would be a older man as well.
Yeah, totally. And, that's the thing I've seen people point out. Like, Dunk is like 7 feet tall. It's the same thing as like, you know, the mountain. You can't really blend in very easily without people being like, there's this gigantic hedge knight walking around doing stuff. I feel like going somewhere into hiding like would make sense. But now it makes me want to like reread A Song of Ice and Fire and be like, are there small nods to a giant person around somewhere? after Summer Hall that George sprinkled in there. Like, I don't know, you know, that's a huge book spoiler that we did not know, that we now presumably know if he's right, which,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, he got it from the source.
It's kind of cute because Dexter saw Ansel, like, he hasn't seen Game of Thrones. Like, he's like, you know, he was 9 when they filmed this season. Yeah. So like, there are all these things where it's like, you know, he's an actor doing a job, and like, there's this rabid fandom that like is looking out for any little thing, and he's like not super aware of like what the big spoilery things he shouldn't be saying are. But yeah, so Dunk maybe survives Summer Hall. So that's one of the big spoilers.
I could talk forever about that, but what are the other ones we got?
Yeah, we got two other ones. The other one came from Peter Claffey, who I saw an interview with him and Tanzin Crawford, who plays Tansel. And basically Peter Claffey said, Dunk and Tansel will meet again. We'll see if the show goes long enough, we'll see them in the same room again, was what he said. So context here for people who haven't read the books, Tansel, obviously she left Ashford Meadow after the whole debacle with Arion. Dunk and Egg go looking for her between books 1 and 2, and they don't find her. So in the books, we still have not seen Tansel again. But Peter Claffey said, they, you know, Ira Parker got the outlines for 10 or 12 books. Peter Claffey says, we will see them together again. Mike, what do you think?
I wonder if that's going to be something that happens in the early enough potential outlines of those books where they, if they did want to extend this. I know Ira Parker said his potential plans were that crazy timeline of disappearing for like 5 or 10 years and coming back. But, or is this something where it happens later in their lives, where their paths have kind of diverged, maybe because, you know, spoilers, but Sir Duncan the Tall does end up in the Kingsguard. Yep. And if she's moved on with her life, maybe it's one of those times they meet each other and it's like, I see you, see me, but we can't be together.
Yeah.
Even though maybe we do still have this strong bond, and maybe it's just able to reconcile some things, like, hey, we could finally make our peace with each other.
Man. I would be so for that. Yes. Yeah, it's crazy to think about them maybe meeting again when they're like middle-aged people instead of right now here, the ages they are in the show.
Because tragedy of life.
Yeah, and like, we know that George R. R. Martin, there are two of these Dunkin' Egg stories he has on and off worked on for years, that it sounds like he's been starting to tinker with them again recently from that Hollywood Reporter interview that took place in December. One of them is called The She-Wolves of Winterfell, which is obviously, it's set at Winterfell. Dunk and Egg go to Winterfell. That one has been long assumed would be the fourth one of these, because it was supposed to be. It was supposed to come out in one of Martin's anthologies with Gardner Dozois, Dangerous Women, and then he cut it because he didn't finish it in time. So there's that one. The other one is The Village Hero, which takes place in the Riverlands. So Tansel went to Dorne. So presumably it's not either of those two. So I don't know, Dunkin' Egg 6 or 7, maybe we'll see Tansel again. But yeah, we know that there is a plan for them to eventually cross paths again.
I'll be ready for it if we get it, maybe in the future sometime.
same. And, you know, Ira Parker did say in that AMA, like, if the show goes past the books, George would be heavily involved in anything they do, which I think is a good call. So the third one is less juicy from the perspective of the, you know, the book spoilers, and more a TV thing.
Oh.
There's another video, once again, of Dexter Saul Ansel and Peter Claffey.
He's just spoiling everything.
Yeah, and this one is from, I think, Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con. But people have been holding these videos and releasing them now as the season's airing, where Peter Claffey talks about how Geralt of Rivia was an inspiration for him. Like, season 1 Geralt of Rivia from The Witcher, he really liked Henry Cavill's performance. And, like, Dunk is, like, Geralt of Rivia if he didn't have his shit together, essentially. Like, that's kind of how he's trying to view him, like taking that kind of inspiration a little bit. And Dexter Saul Ansel is like, do you think we can say the thing about Henry Cavill? And Peter Claffey is like, wait, what? And then he's like, oh no, don't say that. He's like, forget you heard that, he says to the press. So it's the theory that I've seen going around since that clip is that Henry Cavill might have a cameo in season two, because Ira Parker has hinted we may get Blackfyre Rebellion flashbacks in that AMA. He said, yeah, stay tuned when someone asked. So I've seen someone speculated on Twitter today, Dragon Demands, that he would play Damon Blackfyre in a flashback.
All those memes of him being a Targaryen in white hair, they would all come true finally.
They would. They would. And, you know, I feel like you don't get Henry Cavill for a cameo if it's some rando, you know, little lord. Like, they're going to use him to do something interesting. This one's less concrete than the other two. What do you want a Henry Cavill cameo? What do you think of this in the first place?
I would be fine with Henry Cavill. I did get tired back in the day of the, everyone fan casting him for every fantasy series ever.
Oh, totally.
Ever. I'm like, okay, there are other actors than Henry Cavill. But if you are going to use him, I think that him potentially being Damon Blackfyre would be, you know, cool. You get 3 to 4 scenes of him. You don't need too many of them.
Yeah, totally.
For the season, he may be a background character within the flashback, because as we know, there are other characters who we're going to meet who most likely were involved in the Blackfyre Rebellion in two and season three. So it may be from somebody else's perspective of seeing Damon, or, you know, I think it'd be cool if he wanted to portray, there's a character in the next season called Lucas Inchfield.
The Long Inch.
The Long Inch.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That would be a weird casting. Like, I would do, yeah. I will never doubt Henry Cavill, but the Long Inch is supposed to be as big as Dunk, right? Isn't he? Are they like around the same height? Henry Cavill's a lot shorter than him.
You think, how tall? I'm like, how tall is Henry Cavill?
That's where we're at on the podcast today. How tall is Henry Cavill? I'm going to look it up. All right, moment of truth. He's 6'1". He's only 4 inches shorter than Peter Claffey.
You could do that. Yeah. You put some boots on, because the Long Inch is like an inch shorter, an inch or two shorter. So 3 inches. Go.
Yeah, Henry Cavill in pumps. Lucas Inchfield.
That's what we all want to see.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, those are the things that have come out in the past 24 hours, essentially, as we're recording this. So we'll see which of them come to pass. We'll probably be waiting a while for any of them but Henry Cavill. That one we'll find out about probably next year, if that's true or not. But the other ones will be waiting quite a while, because we're talking about season 4, 5 beyond. If the show goes that long, which I guess kind of a final question for you here, would you want the show? The season one has been really good. It's really gone over well with people. I'm sure HBO is happy, because it does not cost them bajillions of dollars to make this, compared to like House of the Dragon, where it's like anytime a dragon's on screen, it's like $100,000 or some insane amount.
Money.
Would you want them to go past the books and do the other stories that George has planned that he probably isn't going to write all of?
And I think that's the thing. I would love to get all these planned stories, but I can see us getting maybe 2 to 3 more, and maybe that being a second wave. But if they did go past that, or if he never comes out with those books and they get to season 4, you know, George has probably gave him copious of notes, gave his input. I would be comfortable with that 4th season and beyond, or whenever the books stop. If they have the story, if they have a concrete plan, let's do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about you?
Yeah, I when they first announced this, my reaction was like, this could be perfect for more Dunkin' Egg stories, because it's, you know, it's they're smaller scale stories. Each one is kind of its own thing. It's a different beast than like running out of A Song of Ice and Fire and then being like, how do we wrap this gargantuan thing up? It's just, can they make new seasons that are about Dunkin' Egg going on other adventures that we now know that George had, you know, all these outlines for? And I've always thought like, this feels like a great compromise. You know, like, George was a TV writer for like a decade. Like, he had a good TV career, making the end, the continuation of Dunkin' Egg stories be a television thing. It's not even just like, oh, here's a novelist who couldn't finish his stuff and now they're going to make a TV show of it. It's like, it almost feels like a nice marriage of both sides of his career that this could keep going and do these other stories. Cause like, even if he writes a few more of these, like there's no way he's going to write 10 more Dunkin' Egg stories. Like, I just don't see that happening. It's been 13 years, 12 years since the Mystery Knight came out, you know, like I had just finished college when the Mystery Knight came out, and that was quite a while ago.
Yeah, I barely knew this was a book series. I was watched like the first season of Game of Thrones, so.
Yeah. So I would love it, honestly, if they do it well. And I think so far they have, you know, they've proven that they deserve the benefit of the doubt, some confidence, I think.
Yeah, because if they knock out season two and they knock it out the park for season three, like, hey, if season four comes, hey, I'm ready. Like, yeah. Hey, do it. I trust you.
Totally. So yeah, we'll see. Until then, we've got one more episode left, though, yes. Which is next week, the season finale of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. You have any final things you want to leave off on here now that we have run, as we typically do, much longer than the episode itself?
I think we truly got to see what it takes to be a knight, and maybe we can all reflect on, do we have the same gumption that Dunk did to survive everything he did in his early in life and up until this moment? Could we be the same knight that he was?
Yeah, he or Sir Arlen of Pennytree. Yes. And yeah, so this has been Take the Black. As always, if you enjoyed, make sure to hit like and subscribe. Find us on everywhere you listen to your podcasts. We're on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Music, all the usual podcast places. Check out Mark on House of Nettles on TikTok and YouTube. And, you know, winteriscoming.net. We've got new articles about everything Westeros, literally like every single day. So yeah, check all that stuff out. Tune in next week when we will be going through the season finale of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. And until then, enjoy your vigil and thinking about your nightly vows.